Do you believe that they are doing the best that they possibly can? And you can only ever answer yes, really. Like, even if people are disappointing you and keep messing up, in their brains, in their lives, they are doing the best that they can.
Well, I'm here naked, and that's the truth, and so are you, and it's okay to remember that it's okay to really feel it, feel every little bit.
The lovely voice you just heard was Kate McGill, who is today's featured guest. She is herself a phenomenal musician, songwriter, podcast host. She has a podcast called We Dive Deeper, which I will link in the show notes. And as always, lots of links in the show notes. And her podcast is basically doing the same thing as mine. We're just trying to tell the truth as courageously and humbly and authentically as possible. And her format is amazing. And she has, you must just go check it out. She interviews some of the raddest people around, and it's just amazing. I talk about it briefly in this episode with her that when I first came across her podcast, I heard about Kate as a recommendation from the lovely Kina Granis, who was my guest a few episodes ago. And Kina was like, you should definitely, well, I think it happened on Twitter where Kate was talking about the episode and I saw Kate and then I checked her stuff. I was like, oh my gosh, you need to be on the podcast. And so that's the story. We chatted about beautiful, wonderful, varied things, everything from the most mundane and ordinary of human experiences, like how to eat healthily, like, and how hard that is, to her mother passing away last year and how she has grieved and how she has been enabled to grieve by her patrons and so many other things. Just really, I realized when I was editing this that I spent a lot of my time laughing in this episode and laughing in a way of just pure joy overflowing. And I realized that that's one of the gifts that Kate brought to me, was just really joy, that just hearing her speak and interacting with her and the stories we told. And it just, every time, no matter how deep, or not just deep, but how painful or sad it got, it always came around. It was like in that darkest night, there was always the dawn that followed. And so, yeah, thank you, Kate, for an amazing conversation. I have put links to a lot of the things we talk about, as many as I can, into the show notes. So please always go and check that out. Just nakedwithnate.com/Kate McGill. Otherwise, just nakedwithnate.com. That's the easiest. And you'll find links to all the things there. As always, thank you so much to everyone who has been listening. I really appreciate you and I so love hearing from you. There've been comments, there've been things unfolding, things happening. It's always wonderful and I love it so much. So I actually share two of my favorite comments, which were both about the Lily LeBeau episode, which was just last week's one. And I just love them so much that I've shared them at the end of this episode anonymously. And yeah, just thank you to the wonderful humans who left me those inspiring comments. Really, your comments keep me going. Like, they keep me remembering, aligned. When I read them, I just got so charged and excited and just reminded that this has value and it matters and it's improving people's lives, even in some little way. And that is worth doing no matter what. Thank you. And if you feel the value in this and you want to help out to make it happen, this is currently, well, it will hopefully always be a labor of pure love. I love doing this podcast and it takes a huge amount of time and I don't make any extra money from it. So if you want to help pay me to make this podcast, if you feel that it's worth a cup of coffee a month or however much you choose, go to nakedwithnate.com, click the Become a Patron button. If you can't afford to pledge, but you still want to help, please go to that same link and click the review button, or share it with your friends. All those wonderful things help. So thank you to all the community who are making this possible. Thank you to Haley, who recently pledged on Patreon. You rock my world. And yeah, that's it. I'm just delighted to be here, delighted to share Kate with you. Please enjoy. I'll see you on the other side. And thank you for getting naked with Nate. Well, first of all, thank you so much for coming on this little internet box with me. I really appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So cool. I it's weird. I think you are one of the people who I have sort of e-met, internet met, and then had on the podcast the soonest after, which is awesome. So congrats to you.
Yeah, I mean, I've just got bags of free time, so I'm just keen as ever to talk to anyone at any point of the day.
You're like, yes, can we have a conversation? I'm so
communication
ready.
In the day, please.
This is actually a good entry point because I've been curious to ask you, as a fellow creator of musical things and a podcast who works for yourself and does it on the interwebs, do you get out much?
No, I don't. But to be honest, I don't want to. me and my best friend's husband were talking about this the other day, and it was like a lazy Sunday and we were hungover and we were just eating crap food. And he was just itching to get out of the house. It'd been like 10 minutes and he's like, the sun's shining, I need to get out. And I was like, I couldn't think of anything worse than getting out of the house. And I was saying, one of my favorite things is that I've created such a home for myself here that I don't want to leave. So Monday to Friday, I don't really get outside. But I'm happy as Larry. I mean, when you get outside, you get in the sun and you're like, oh, okay, I see why people like this. This is good.
Yeah.
If I can avoid it, I will.
That's fantastic. I so appreciate that. I feel like I'm somewhere on that spectrum as well, because my sweetheart, Carly, she gets kind of cabin fever within a day or two. And even today we had a lot of errands this morning driving around, and we've been driving around a lot just recently. We've got a lot going on. And she was saying, oh, it's just so nice to get out the house. And I kind of went quiet. I was like, well, I really like being in the house.
Yeah. I wonder if that's because we're a certain type of human being. I don't know. I'm not very like adventurous. I'm not really an outdoorsy kind of let's go climb mountains and explore type girl. I don't know about you.
Mm. I'm not sure what type of girl I am yet. I'm still working that one out.
Great hair.
Thank you very much. And on my face as well. I'm that one of those very fortunate bearded ladies. I actually have my gender on Facebook set as her or she, just because I hate boxes. And I think that's, someone once said to me when they found out I said, like, I really don't like star signs, because it's like you're trying to box people into 12 boxes. And then they said, what star sign are you? I said, Aquarius. And they said, oh, that's so Aquarian of you.
I like that.
The frustration. But no, to answer your question around the outdoorsy stuff, I actually am. But I feel torn in twain by my sort of combating desires, where one part of me loves this, being inside and on the internet and doing geeky techie things and quietly hidden away from the world. But the other part of me gets so much out of literally climbing mountains and surfing and diving and catching my own food and having this very intensely wild experience. So I'm trying to make them friends, because I've been feeding the sort of indoor side for a long time. So
right. I need to take a leaf from your book, I think. And just because, like I said, once you actually do get out there, you're like, damn, this is good. Why don't I push myself to do it? But there's such home comforts and convenience for me. I'm just convenience queen. And if I can have everything that I want, know and love around me, then I'm like, I don't need to go anywhere. I'm comfortable. I'm good. But sometimes you need to be uncomfortable and climb a mountain.
Right. I mean, I just finished a 10-day wilderness survival training course with Carly.
Wow.
We did it together. It was so much harder than if I had known how hard it was before, I would have been like, no, I'm comfortable and I want to stay that way. But it was really all the boundaries being pushed out in all directions. So
wow. What made you want to do that?
It was a part of this desire, knowing that I want to engage that side of myself more. And yet when the opportunities arise, I'm so often like, no, I think I'll just watch Netflix. I think I'm good. And so Carly, actually, she runs like rewilding retreats. She has a company called The Wild Love, and she does rewilding for women and these beautiful, amazing self-empowerment retreats and everything. And she,
I need
wants
to go on one of these.
Oh my gosh, you should. You totally. It's phenomenal.
I would.
Anytime. Come hang out.
Okay. I'll ask for more info after.
Yeah, totally. I'll put it in the show notes, dear listeners.
Yes.
She had these people who run these wilderness courses coming on her retreat, but she had to cancel for various reasons. And she paid this deposit. And they were like, well, why don't you use that deposit instead to come on this amazing course we're doing? And when I read about it, I was like, I want to do that too. And so we did it. And it was all the things. It's like what you're saying of knowing that I want to get outside more. When I do, I feel better. But this was like that, but times 100. It was so intense, so difficult in the elements and cold and uncomfortable a lot of the time. And yet I felt better through it. And I still feel it's definitely inspired me to get out more. So there you have it.
Wow, I admire that like a lot. I really need to listen to what you're saying. Well, we should take it.
So when I'm next in the UK, or if you ever desire to visit South Africa, we can do our best to motivate one another. The danger is I also very much have the, so we might meet up and be like, should we just Netflix? Should we just do that? And we're like, yeah, totally. Let's watch a wilderness program on Netflix.
How are you with food stuff? Because I'm like, if I can get a takeaway every day, I'll do it. And I have such bad habits when it comes to food.
Well, I'm not like that. I definitely love my sugary, sweety things, but I've spent a lot of years shifting in a direction of whole foodedness because of health challenges. Like basically I don't have people deal with those kind of foods in different ways. And so I found for me, I just get sick very quickly. Like I'll get ill, you know, not like vomiting, but just, I just keep getting
under
the flu,
the
just down. And so, and how do you feel well in your, do you feel energized and enlivened in your day-to-day living?
No. So it's been, I mean, my journey with food has been all over the shop, and I'm sure a lot of it's down to like childhood and parenting and the patterns that you just get into. But very recently I've kind of, from moving to this new place, I've had weeks where I've been really good and focused on health. And then I've had weeks where I've been down and then I just eat takeaway food. But it's been really interesting seeing quite literally from week to week the difference in my mood, the difference in my skin, the difference in my energy, just so quickly diminished. And I was like, damn, I'd never really noticed the contrast that much before. I guess normally it's such a gradual kind of in and out. Sometimes I'll eat bad, sometimes I won't. But because it was just 1 week on, 1 week off, I was amazed at just how different I felt. So that's been a bit of a learning curve. So I'm very much on, I want to say on the health train, but yeah, you can clearly see that my head around food is messed up, but we're trying each day.
Right, exactly. I think we're all, well, I can't speak for everyone, but it seems to me we live in a culture that has a kind of pretty bad relationship with food overall.
Yeah.
It's like do you tour much? Because I know you're an actively playing live musician, so.
Well, we kind of had our years of touring, but honestly, I hate touring so much. There was a time that I honestly loved it and I'd want to do it all day in, day out. But now I just don't enjoy it. And also, not many people come to our live shows. So we just cut that. Yeah, there was just a kind of time where we were like, we don't need to actually do this. We're kind of wasting a lot of energy here. But when we did, it was, yeah, like when you're on tour, it's terrible. You're just drinking alcohol all the time. And because you kind of in my head, because we did it kind of, I don't know, for a couple of weeks in the summer and then a couple of weeks in the winter, it always felt like a holiday. So I was just like, yeah, let's go to McDonald's. Do you know what I mean? It was just terrible. So it's good to not be on tour anyway. I feel like if I can get better with food, it's only going to be through routine and, you know, being focused on it.
Oh, I feel that so much. And that's one of the things. So I mean, we still drive around a fair amount and we go, Carly and I enjoy road tripping and we're definitely wanting to get more into that as we want to get more outdoorsy. But every single petrol station we stop at, or what do you call them in England, actually?
Yeah, oh well, service station, I guess.
Service station, okay. And then in America, I think it's again something else. But anyway, because
truck
stop. Yeah, that's funny. I love that. I remember when I first, I'm getting so sidetracked, but when I first came to England and I literally said something like, oh, my pants are, I need to wash my pants, they're really dirty or something. And in South Africa, pants is your trousers. And I didn't,
right.
I don't think I ever said pants again as long as I was in England after that. For those who don't know, pants is underwear in England. And so that was a fun moment.
That would definitely be an eyebrow raiser if you said that to me.
Yeah, like, ooh, okay, that's too much. We just met.
Yeah, TMI.
Anyway, so what I was saying is that on the road, I've noticed that eating healthily, even if you want to, is pretty much impossible because every truck stop, every petrol station, the food they offer there is just sugar and white flour and all of the things that do all of the things to our bodies. And so to make a decision in the other direction is actually a real act of often willpower, often too much willpower, actually. So getting habits and routines in place, super helpful. Being around other people who are on that journey, super helpful. And also staying super mellow about it. Like this idea of it being a regimented, I got it wrong. I ate the wrong thing. And now it's, you know, and the only thing I'm extreme about is not being extreme about things.
I love that. I think that's such a good way of looking at it. It's taken me so long to get to that same place, I think. Like, I mean, damn, a couple of years ago, I was so regimented, but only because I was like, I've had enough. I'm fat. Like, you know, just horrible stuff to yourself that you just don't need at times like that. And I'd be like, from now on, I'm never eating any cookie. I'd just be crazy about it. Whereas now I just know that's never going to work. It hasn't worked. So why is it going to suddenly work now? So I'm much, much more chilled. But I mean, I still struggle. It's the willpower, like you said. I mean, I just have fucking none of that.
Mm.
None of it.
I think, I don't know.
Sorry,
man.
Am I allowed to swear?
Fuck yeah. Swear okay, away. Good. This is, sorry, I meant to say that at the beginning. I also asked that as I'm getting passionate in a podcast interview and someone's, I'm just before I continue, what's the word on the swear words here? no, absolutely. Do you know the holistic psychologist on Instagram? By any chance?
No, but we were talking about her the other day, right? She's coming on your podcast?
She is. Actually, I think I'm speaking with her tomorrow if all goes according to plan.
We've been amazing.
She's great. She's one of those people who really is just on point with this kind of stuff. And she talks a lot about this idea of self-sabotage comes a lot from our childhood when we were modeled basically not healthy habits. So either our parents or wherever it was modeled, generally parents in some way, and this is not blaming. Thank you, parents. You guys did great. But we all do the best we can. And at times, if we get modeled this thing of what is it like not sticking through with stuff, not having clear boundaries, all those kinds of things, then we do that to ourselves. And I know for myself, I have tried so many times to set up morning practices. I'm like, I'm going to do all the things. I'm going to do the artist's way. I'm going to do the gratitude journal. I'm going to drink green tea. I'm going to be the most amazing Zen person every morning. And it lasts generally about 3 weeks before it all falls apart again.
And 3 weeks is pretty good.
Thank you. Well, that added a push. Those are actually the most recent one. That was my long, was almost 6 months of pretty much on-itness.
Wow. But then
when it fell, thank you. But when it fell hard, and I haven't been able to get back on it since. But what she was saying is about learning to believe the promises we make to ourselves. So instead of saying, like now, if I were to say, and it sounds like if you were to say, we're just going to eat whole food, green stuff for the next 3 weeks, I would immediately go, that's definitely not happening. Like there's a part of me that would just be like, no. And so what she says, start so small. Like I'm just one thing. I'm going to have one green juice a day for the next 30 days. And just, but make that however small it needs to be that I know that I can do it. 1 minute of meditation a day. But don't then add a bunch of other things. Just start there. And that's where I'm at right now. I meditated for 1 minute this morning and I felt real good about it.
That's amazing. And I think you're so right. Like starting small is what you need to do. So often you're like, I'm going to climb this massive mountain. Of course, you're not going to climb that mountain. Like be realistic with yourself. Mm. And I too have set myself a challenge as of today that I'm, you know, yoga with Adrienne. She's that really
yes.
cool. Yeah. She, I went on her site and I'm doing the 30 days of yoga, but only because, I mean, I need to exercise, but I hate exercise and cardio, whereas yoga feels like it's somewhere in between moving your body, but also spirituality and just a bit more relaxing. So I feel like I can really do that and commit to it. So I did my day one today and I feel like I believe myself when it comes to this one. I'm not going to fuck it up. So
yay.
We can, in 30 days, I'll be like, have you meditated every morning?
That sounds fantastic. Well done on that. That's huge. So I wanted to get, I said earlier, I wanted to listen to some of your songs. And so you've chosen two, which is amazing. This is what I never know which order to do in. But basically you can choose is that either you can tell the story of the first song first and then we listen to the song, or we can listen to the song and then you can tell the story of it. And that's kind of, if you don't have a way that you'd prefer, then I'll just say something.
I'll say it first because I feel like it gives people a better, when listening to it, a better idea. The first one is called Unable, and I actually wrote it, I don't know, like 10 days ago.
Whoa.
And it's about, it was the 5-year anniversary of, it would have been the 5-year anniversary of me and my ex, and we parted ways in February. And it's kind of about, at the end of the day, like I lost someone who wasn't really able to love me, and he lost someone who was very able to love him. So we've lost very different things. And it's kind of just about recognizing, you know, after all the time that's passed, things are still really difficult and we're in very different places. And yeah, the lyrics do most of the talking.
Today would have been 5 years. Would you believe it? I'm sat here crying, wondering if you remember me. I'm saving anniversaries. You're making new memories with her. I'm a fool, that's guaranteed. Ain't it crazy that I'm still here with all this love for you? But there's one thing that I got here that gets me through. When all is said and all is won, you lost someone who'd have done anything just to love around the sun. But all I lost was someone who's unable to love me. You're unable to love me. I see clearly that my missing you dearly is just a habit I need to break. But it would help if I wanted to, help if I hated you, help if I saw you for all that you are, for all that you are. Said and all this one, you lost someone who'd have done anything just to love you one more time around the sun. But all I lost was someone who's unable to love.
Heartbreak is so painful.
Tell me about it.
Oh, that was a proper heartbreak song. That was a
gotta love it.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, your fair share of heartbreak?
Yeah, I have. It's been a journey, but I actually wrote a song some years ago called Heart in a Million Pieces, which was basically inspired by three different heartbreaks. It kind of took three to get to the point I was like, okay, I'm ready to write this bloody song.
Bloody hell. Three major heartbreaks.
Well, I wouldn't say that none of them. So I dive in deep and immediately a lot of the time. But
same.
Yeah. But this is, I wonder where this song. So do you feel like this song is coming from a place of processing this experience or a place of, like, in a way, holding on to the experience? I know that's a hard question to ask. But.
Oh, no, it's fine. I've done so much processing since February. Like, I mean, the human I am, it's impossible for me not to process. I'd never, like, hide away or try and make myself believe something that's not true. Like, I'm very, when it comes to my own, what life is, I'm very factual with myself. But, you know, transparently, I still love this guy hugely and I have so much hope. And yeah, he's literally with someone else. So I'm trying to remind myself every day, like, these are the facts, you know. But I'm such an idealist and a dreamer, and I believe that people can change and be better, and that, you know, I'm a bit of an idealist. So I've processed as much as I physically possibly can, and I'm telling myself every day the facts of what this is. But in my heart of hearts, I long for a future together. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for being real about that. That's amazing. That's such a courageous. Ah, that's huge.
Let's hope he never listens to this.
Right, exactly. I feel like from my difference in that is that a large part of my personal trauma was around abandonment. My relationship with my mom was fraught with her just not being there in the times that I needed her most critically, to the point that she disappeared at one point for like 9 months when I was pretty, like, 12 years old or 13 years old. And without explanation, all these kind of things. And we're in a good relationship now, and it's a working relationship. We are working on it, and it's challenging. But I feel like my defense mechanism around that was that as soon as things started to get a little uncomfortable, I was the first one to just bail, to get the fuck out of there so quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, that song, Heart in a Million Pieces, I wrote that after I had sort of gone through this period of celibacy in my mid-20s, and then sort of re-entered this interacting, realizing I wanted to interact in a different way. And I was, for the first time, really letting my heart really enter into these experiences. And oh my gosh, it is fraught with danger and pain.
But, yeah, right? Man, that's amazing though, that you, like, you went on such a journey like that with, like, opening yourself back up to people after what sounds like a crazy traumatic kind of childhood experience. Like, that's amazing that you're where you are now, and that you're with your sweetheart, and that you're feeling kind of complete as you can be. Obviously, we're work in progress people, but that's so cool, and I need to hear this song.
Yeah, I'll send you, actually there's a crazy version of it on YouTube with where I was playing it to the third woman. Like semi unfinished version, because I knew as soon as I met her and we started talking to one another, I was like, I am in so much. This is going to be so bad. Like, this is not. this is a recipe for disaster. And that's when I started writing the song, because I was like, I was diving into it and I knew what was coming. And then I actually was sitting in a hotel room on like the 16th floor in San Francisco, playing her this song, and she filmed it. And I'll send you that version. It's up on YouTube. I'll put it in the show notes as well, but. Oh, love.
That's sick.
You are such a romantic. That's fantastic. I think there's.
But then I also, like you said, I was thinking about how we are in relationships and our relationship with food. Like, they all go back to childhood and what we, you know, our parents and stuff. And the sad part is my dad left my mom, and they kind of got back together here and there. But like before she still massively loved him and didn't meet anyone else. And then she died, and he's kind of with someone else now. And I'm like, damn, am I just going to be like my mom and just pining for someone for the rest of my life who doesn't feel the same way? And yeah, you just kind of, you see all the patterns, and I see myself repeating them, and I'm like, damn, I can't seem to stop this. I am my mom. It's bizarre.
That is wild. That is not an uncommon story. I mean, it's the opposite. In fact, the story of us playing out the patterns set up by our parents and then their parents, and who knows how far back some of these things can go.
Maybe from now on, when we meet people, we should be like, first of all, what's your parents' marriage like? Yeah. Are they together? What did they do? Because chances are we're going to do the exact same thing.
Totally. Well, I think my dad has a beautiful story about, I mean, the lineage on my father's side is one of violence, basically, is one of the primary traumas that has been passed down through. There's also been positives, obviously, lots of positives. But if we're talking about the stuff that shapes us in a sort of maybe challenging negative way or destructive way, put it that way, one of them is violence on my dad's side. And he had a moment when he was in his, I think, 40s, and he started therapy, I think, in his late 30s, and realizing he wanted to unravel these things. And he was on a weekend, a transactional analysis weekend, which is a kind of psychotherapy. And I think the facilitator said something like, you can break the chains. You can, through doing the work on yourself over time, you can break the chains. And my dad said he spent the rest of that weekend weeping. Like, he just literally, to actually realize for the first time in his life that he could do it differently, that he didn't have to have that lineage pass through him. And I think that's what I keep as hopeful, because, you know, my dad did better than his dad and my mom did better than her mom, but they both gave me the traumas that they themselves received in some way or another. And I feel like through my own work, I can change that. And so for you as well, it's like the fact that you're even aware, the fact that you even have that you are like, there is a pattern and I am playing it out. That is massive.
Yeah, right. The fact that there's any kind of self-awareness, and we're just awake to the fact that we can repeat these patterns. A lot of people, sadly, just they're in their own heads and they're in their own lives, and they don't even realize that there's this massive, like, unconscious thing that's driving their entire lives. And so as soon as you can, yeah, like you said, just recognize and understand that, oh, actually, this is kind of all built in me, kind of like a machine when I'm younger. And all I have to do is recognize the wiring to be like, oh, okay, we can unbreak them a bit now and change them around. Easier said than done, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I see, like, on a daily basis, I look at those little patterns and I'm like, oh, cool, I can change that now. And then something comes to trigger it and I'm immediately right there. Just, oh.
Exactly. Yeah, it's me and Keena were talking about that, actually. We're just how frustrating it is to almost, from a bird's eye view, watch yourself make the mistakes that you're just like, oh, I know this is like my thing. Why do I keep doing it? I'm watching myself do it. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Frustrating.
It is frustrating. My dad, another story of my dad's, have you heard of Vipassana meditation by any chance?
I think I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a 10-day, it's a technique, apparently the one taught by Buddha and that whole thing. And, but it's, you can do your initial one as a 10-day silent meditation retreat. And on that, it's intense. It's like 11 hours of meditation a day anyway, that's a whole nother story. But
there's you like with your 1 minute, like, I'm going, I'm trying. You'll get to 11 hours.
It was me at that time. It was me with zero meditation experience. And I went on the only one I've been on so far. Anyway, but one of the thing that the teacher, Goenka, he says, because they show videos or play audio of him, and he says, meditation basically just gives you,
I think someone's at my door.
Go, fine. Greet
this person. Is that right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I just installed this new doorbell, so I'm just very happy it works, to be honest.
Oh, there you go. We've just tested it out. Perfect.
Where were we?
Oh, it doesn't. I was just saying, yes, Goenka and meditation. He basically said the reason we meditate is because over time, we basically get a fraction of a second of time between the thing that happens and our reaction to the thing that happens. And over time, you might then get an entire second before the usual reaction kicks in. And then as you increase meditation or over time, eventually you get to choose, go, oh, how do I want to respond to this?
Yeah. I'm guessing you've read The Power of Now and stuff like that.
Bits of it. I haven't read that, but yeah, stuff like that for sure.
Yeah, it's all about that, isn't it? Just you have this kind of unconscious being that wants to react to everything, but as soon as you can just, yeah, have that 1 second of just being like, wait, okay, I can stop this before it begins. How do I actually want to go forward? It's huge. It's such a life-changing thing to be able to do. We're really, like, I consider myself very lucky at this age to even be aware of that.
Exactly. I wish they taught all of this in school. I feel like I've said that on several of my episodes, but I really do.
And meditation. Imagine if I ever have a kid, I'm going to force it down their throats.
Violent meditation.
Yeah, violent meditation.
You will be the best meditator this world has ever known.
You will do 11 hours a day, goddammit. You will not have a life.
Yeah, exactly. That's no fun meditation. You mentioned earlier about your mom and that she passed on, and that was kind of, as I said, I only come across you quite recently, but that came out quite clearly in the way that you've been sharing and talking. And I have not yet lost a parent, and I have no frame of reference to understand what that feels like. And I guess in the brief moment I've come across you, I appreciate how open you've been about it and how communicative. And so I don't know, is there anything you'd like to share with people about that? Or just, I don't even know what to say, but I just want to hear that story a little bit. It's such a hard thing for even to ask, but
it's, I know people who have lost someone say this a lot, but to be asked about her is an absolute privilege. And to be able to speak about, I don't know, that day or her or, you know, what she's taught me is amazing. It's an amazing gift to give someone. So thank you for asking. It was last August, and it was actually Keena's birthday. But it was completely out of the blue. She just had a heart attack, basically, out of the blue, and died that day. And it was very quick. We all kind of traveled down home, which is like a 2-hour journey. And she was kind of awake, I think. Not like awake, but there was still oxygen in her body, but it hadn't been to her brain for so long. And it was a crazy day, because it's one of those things that you never think it's going to happen to you. You always think, oh, you know, other people lose their mums and whatever. But it was absolutely crazy. And I've, you know, never seen a dead body before, let alone your mum lying there. And it's jarring, and it taught me a lot. And I think I kind of made grief kind of like an exercise. And luckily, because of Patreon, I didn't have a 9-to-5 job like my siblings. So I was able to go home and just dedicate my time to grieving, really. Around that time, there's not a second that passes that you're not in the turmoil and life's not the worst thing ever. But I was able to process so much day in, day out. I focused on it that within 6 months, I felt like I'd gotten everything out that I possibly needed to. Like, it doesn't hit me randomly in the days anymore. Like, I genuinely feel like I grieved so intensely that it just doesn't faze me anymore. It doesn't hit me in the same way. And I can think of her and I can just smile and, you know, all those kind of cliches. But it's just so crazy. And even actually last night I was lying in bed and I was like, how mental is it that she's just not in the world anymore? Like, this woman that you know so deeply and who knows you and you just assume is always there, just suddenly is not on the planet and you can never see them again or speak to them again. It's jarring and it's bizarre. I feel like that was a terrible answer. I went all around the houses, but basically it's so strange. But I feel like I've learned crazy, crazy amounts about myself and my family and how I deal with loss and, you know, everything. But she, what's cool about her, I mean, that's an understatement. There was so much that was cool about her, but she was massively into meditation and she was a teacher of it. And she became an Ashaya monk and she was teaching me so much. And the saddest part is obviously after she died, it was only then that I started kind of learning much more about meditation and spirituality and reading all the books that she'd been trying to force down my throat for years. And I was like, damn, like, why am I only learning this now? I've got so much to ask you and so much that I wish I could pick your brain about, but isn't that just the way life goes? But she was an awesome, awesome human being.
I mean, I thought you spoke beautifully, and it's such a like a mystery to me at this point. Although we'll all go through that kind of loss at some point, which is fucking intense. Many times over, in fact. Like, you know, I mean.
I know, right? But oh my God, do you know what the weirdest part was? Is that the day before, me and my bandmate were just, we were meant to do a festival on that day. And so we were rehearsing the day before, and I said the words, I've never had to deal with a close death before, that's still to come. And then the next day, it's like the universe definitely plays some weird little tricks on you like that. It was very strange, but kind of funny now.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, my aunt said when my grandmother passed, this was some years ago, actually in the UK as well, in Bristol. But hers was, she was super old and kind of not really her brain wasn't really connected to three dimensions anymore already. And so, but it was a lengthy process of like a few weeks of her just slowly, slowly going. And my aunt said the thing that actually she found, I don't know if it was surprising or just that kind of kept them going, was she and her sister were kind of there holding that space, and it was humor. They said they laughed so much. I mean, their mom wasn't really up for conversation, but between them, they were so exhausted and looking after her all the time. And they said they just actually had so much fun. Like they laughed and in amongst this impossible grief. And I thought, oh, fuck, that's so interesting.
I think I was saying the same thing, or like I did a video on it. And the main thing that I learned was, yeah, that everything still exists. Like, yeah, there's this huge heaviness and you're crying a lot of the time, obviously, and your brain's trying to process something. But yeah, like food still tasted really good, and I still loved the company of my friends, and I still laughed at things. Like everything was still fine. There was just kind of this black sludge that was just following me for a bit. But like, you're right, like emotions are so high that the highs are equally as wonderful, because you're like, damn, I felt so sad for a while that this laughter feels incredible. I completely understand that.
Yeah, one of the things that really struck me about what you said was around your patrons and Patreon. I mean, we're both Patreon creators, and that you basically were given time to grieve by having support. I mean, that's the point where I was like, oh, I think I'm going to start crying now. but we live in a world that actually doesn't give us space for grief, really, and to go, okay, take however long you need and grieve. The community will support you. We understand. It's beyond description. You need to go into this.
Right.
Why don't we have a world that does that for people?
I know. Like, you get, like, I think my brothers and sister got like a week off at the most. And I couldn't understand it then. And I think, I genuinely believe that's why their grief and their loss, you know, comes up and hits them much more, because it was delayed. They literally had to go to work and focus on anything else and push this emotion down. So it's going to keep coming up. And it's a weird thing to say that I felt lucky to just be able to sit there and cry all the time. That's obviously strange, but I will never, ever be able to thank my patrons enough for that, because they were all so supportive, as you can imagine. And they were like, you don't have to commit to anything. Like, don't voice note us, don't upload creations, don't do anything. We will just be here. And they were like, take a year if you want. Like, they were so incredible. And I mean, how fortunate is that? I mean, it's just incredible. Thinking back to it now, like, I'm the luckiest human being on the planet. I really believe that.
It works so deeply in my core beliefs around what humanity, the potential that we have for one another and how we are designed to treat one another. I think of myself as well. I've really struggled with depression the last few years, and my creation has been like super low. And so, yeah, my Patreon has been shrinking, my patrons overall, in the vast majority, have just been like supportive in ways that I struggle to feel okay about. Like, it's hard for me to just accept that. And yet, for them, It's, yeah, anyway, thank you, like, patrons.
Yeah, you. Right? You guys are incredible. It's so cool because I remember Keena saying, like, they love you and what you do is a bonus thing, but they just like you and they want to support you in what you're doing in your life. And yeah, I cannot get my head around that. Still to this day, I'm like, yeah, but they're going to get annoyed at me if I don't do this and I'm having a really bad day. And they're just like, Kate, take your time. It's fine. And I cannot get my head around it. Crazy, generous, wonderful, beautiful people.
Totally. Well, I think it's actually the thought that comes to me now is interesting how our job, well, how I see our job, and you can tell me how you that aligns or not, but our job is to put words to the indescribable
yeah.
experience of being human. The emotions from everything from, you know, falling in love to heartbreak, which is, I think, is pretty much as broad as you can get in terms of spectrum.
Yeah.
And that we literally dedicate our lives to that. And a lot of society doesn't really, they listen to our songs and they use them in soundtracks and society loves having our music on as background in cafes. But when it comes to actually paying artists, the message I've so often got is, well, you should get a real job if you want to make money out of that. But our patrons and the people who get it are, for them, they value it so much that they pay us to do that. And then when we reach those points where we literally have to go deep into those feelings, they're like, of course, because that's what you're
so
here to do.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I've never seen it so wonderfully simply before.
It's quite
that's
nice.
That's sick. Yeah, we're some lucky people, man. I really,
truly.
I'll never, and you know, like, I'm very aware that there's going to be one day in my life that things are probably going to change and adapt and maybe I won't be 60 and still doing this stuff. But I never want to be able to look back and be like, oh, I just took that time for granted. And because I like have to force myself every day to really think, like, my friends are getting up and going to work and some of them are very unhappy in their jobs and some of them don't feel fulfilled. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I have everything I could possibly want. And I have dedicated people that just love me and want to support me. Like, I need to remember this every single day because it's just insanely amazing. And yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy. There's an interesting difference in the way the Western mind and the sort of Eastern or Middle Eastern mind works, which I read about some time ago. It was where if you go to a sort of beggar on the streets of... Or at least the way the Western mind works is that we tend to or lean towards going, well, my life's not okay because look at what all those other people have. They have all those things I don't have and that I want. And I even had a moment of that with when I saw your podcast and I was like, even your name, We Dive Deep. I was like, it's so sensible and it's so clear what it's talking about. And you have so many great interviewees and you have so many great reviews. And I was just like, oh, my podcast sucks. And I did that thing. I just I had to throw that out just in all nakedness.
Yes.
I had that shame piece around looking at other and thinking I'm not as good. But that's what we kind of trained to do in the West. And then if you go to sort of the streets of Mumbai or something in India and you see a beggar with a bowl and you say, oh my gosh, your life looks really difficult. And he'll look over and he'll say, see that beggar over there? He doesn't have a bowl. At least I have a bowl. And it's like that difference. Yeah. Anyway, how we look
totally.
At it all. We're all doing the best we can. Everyone I've ever met has something to be grateful for. And that's...
Yeah. And also just carrying on what you just said, I remember hearing when people are kind of angry at people or frustrated at people or disappointed in people, you have to ask the question, do you believe that they are doing the best that they possibly can? And you can only ever answer yes, really. Like, even if people are disappointing you and, I don't know, keep messing up, in their brains, in their lives, they are doing the best that they can. And I feel like it just strips away any kind of judgment, really, because everyone's genuinely trying. And I mean, that had no relevance to what you just said, but...
No, I think it does. I think that's such a beautiful way of... I think there are certain like archetypal or base truths about being human, and that is one of them. I had that exact thought some years ago, and it clicked with me, and I just thought... In all my life, have I done the best I can? Even when the best I can was really, really, really bad and I did really terrible things and hurt people, and was I doing the best I could in that moment? I did, clearly, because that's what I did.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I was out there going, I'm going to hurt people now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the film Humans? How much time do you have, by the way?
I've got bags of it.
Okay, wicked. So there's a film which I still haven't watched the full film. I've only watched little excerpts of it, but one of the trailers, it's called Human, I think, or Humans. I will link to it as well in the show notes, but it's Jan Artus Bertrand, who is one of my favorite photographers, made this movie. And the reason that I know about it is I saw a little clip of a sort of trailer on Facebook or whatever. And it was this guy, I think an African-American man, sitting with sort of a dark background. So I didn't know where he was. And he's talking directly to the camera. He's looking straight into the camera. And he's talking and he's telling a horrific story, basically. And he's saying that when his father used to beat him when he was a child, and he would tell him he did it because he loved him. And so growing up, he equated love with pain. And when he grew up, his way to tell if people loved him was how much pain they could take from him, to the point. And then as he's talking, I'm hearing sounds in the background. He sounds like he's in prison. And I realize, oh gosh, he's in prison. And it turns out that he actually did the most horrific of things, which was to kill his wife and their child, I think. I don't know the exact details, but like the most horrific thing. And as he's talking, oh, I get so emotional with this one. It really hit me hard, but these tears start to just pour out of his eyes, and he's not like sobbing. He's just talking calmly to the camera, and his eyes are just overflowing. And he says, when I learned what love really is when the mother and grandmother, when the mother of my wife and the grandmother of our child came to visit me in prison, and she showed me what real love is. And I just, like, this is the world that he did the best that he could with, where he thought that love was pain, and it took someone, this woman, this huge-hearted woman whose child had been killed by him, to come to prison and be like, I'm here and I love you. And he was like, whoa, that's what love is.
Wow.
Fuck.
Yeah, I know. That is fucking crazy, isn't it? I think, like, it's such a crazy point to get to. And I understand, like, I think I spoke to my dad about this on the podcast I did with him. And he was saying, like, you know, even murderers, these people that, you know, everyone would deem just evil. And, you know, you see, like, on the Daily Mail, the comments are like, yeah, hang them, they're terrible, blah, blah. And there's just this blanket, these people suck. And I'm just like, no, everyone has their story. There's a reason for everything that everyone does. And even if you don't understand it, if you were born with their childhood, their brains, their location, you would do the same thing. And as soon as you can kind of understand that, even just a little bit, you can't ever judge anyone ever again. Like, we're all just human beings. And yes, we're all in completely different parts of our journeys, but you could never just blanket someone as, oh, they're terrible, the end. Like, do you know what I mean? Once you see it so clearly like that, every human is just the most wonderful, magical, complex thing ever.
No, exactly that. This is such good conversations. I feel like this is, I want to live my life every day the way we're talking now. Like, that's like,
I know, right?
You know, like, I feel like
that's why I did my podcast too, for this exact reason.
Yeah. I had a wild experience many years ago when one of the first times I was living in London. And I don't know how it happened, but I had this, I think it was the first time I was really eating very clean food for a while, and I wasn't drinking, and I got in the space of very, like, a lot of clarity, and I just started to get clear in my head in a way I hadn't been before. And I was riding the tube a lot, and I started having this very strange experience where everywhere I looked, I was seeing angels, like, but people, it was everyone. It was all the people on the train. And everywhere I looked, I was like, I can't see a place where there isn't an angel. And just that the candle that is their angel flame was just brighter or dimmer in some of them, but in none of them was it out. There is no one in this world who does not. And I was seeing it, not literally physically, but it's the only way I can describe it, as it was a light. And in some they were dim and some were shining. And I was looking around like, does anyone else see this? Is this, because here we are, all of us. There's not a non-angel around me on this tube every day.
How cool is that?
It was pretty cool.
That's
it didn't
amazing.
Last, but it was amazing.
And in London too, of all places.
Right.
Wow.
I know. Okay, I want to hear, we have another song of yours and I would love to hear it. So tell us, what is this song?
Yeah, I guess this is definitely about the kind of couple of weeks after Mum died. And it was very much about just hiding away, not wanting to see anyone or do anything, but just sit there and think of her. But also realizing that life just would never be the same because she kind of embodied me. And now that she wasn't there, it was very much like a, well, who the hell am I? And what's my life about now that she isn't here?
Safe, stay inside. I don't want to hear a sound. I wait, isolate. One low footsteps on the ground. 'Cause this is not like what I felt before. This is all of that and more. I am crumbling right to my very core. This is all of that and more. More, more, more. How can my body stay alive? How can I hold on long enough to see? 'Cause you embody all of me. You embody all of me. Wake, see your face. Tell myself you're not around. This pain won't go away. I'm only lost, I'll never found. 'Cause this is what I felt before. This is all of that and more. And the months go by and I don't know what for. You were all of that and more. How can my body stay alive? How can I hold on? You embody all of me. You embody all of me. How can my body stay alive? How can I hold on long enough to see? 'Cause you embody all of me. You embody all of me.
It's interesting to me because it sounds like that song, based on what you've been saying now, that you've come through that, right? Like that place where that song was written in.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm so grateful that I think that song is a reminder to me that no matter how crazy dark your brain can get and in the depths of anything, you always come out of it, and there's always it's always going to be okay again. And you're like, even it was only coming out of depression and grief and all that stuff the beginning of this year that I realized I was even in it. But there were times that I just so such intense pain that I'm sure we've all felt. I mean, I can remember like just wincing with pain and like scratching myself through emotional pain, which is crazy. And I, you know, I was, yeah, borderline suicidal. I was texting my dad like, please, if I still feel like this in a year, will you help me die? Which is just crazy. Like my brain is just not there anymore. But there was a time I was clearly there. And so now coming out of it and hearing the songs that I made and even just reading the texts that I sent, it's just a reminder of, damn, like it never stays the same. And you can be in such a different mental place in such a short amount of time too, that you just need to keep going. Because if you'd have told me, like, you know, the end of the year, you'll be living in a new place and you'll be so happy, and I just wouldn't have believed you. So yeah, I think these songs are a reminder of that, that things just change and move and grow.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for that song. This actually made me, what you were just saying brought up a question around, and this is something I still don't know what to do about, and maybe someone who's experienced it, you could say, it's like, what felt like the responses that resonated with you when someone would hear your mom's died? And then so they come to, they see you for the first time since it's happened, and they say whatever they say. What are the things that go, oh wow, that feels good, however that feels, or that doesn't feel at all? Do you have any examples of those? Or, I mean, I hope they don't never listen to this, but it's not a judgment. It's that, because I don't know, because I want to say I'm sorry, but I have no idea what that, how, what am I sorry for? What do I even know? I don't have shit to say.
Yeah, you are not the first person to ask this. And I think everyone can, I think it's because it's one of those situations that there is literally nothing that you can do or say. People are just like, well, what do I say then? Because it's just, everything is going to feel like empty. But I mean, I can definitely tell you what not to say, which I had some aunts that are just, you know, the kind of older generation that are very much stuck in their ways. And they'd be kind of like, don't cry, your mum wouldn't want that. Or, you know, the kind of, yeah. And you're just kind of like, what? She literally died last week. Like, are you telling me not to cry? But I think, you know, people have different relationships with their emotions. So I can understand that, you know, given this human, I was like, okay, I can see you for what you are. You're just trying to help, but that's not helpful. But to be honest, I just would encourage you to never worry about what you could say that could ever be wrong or offensive or heartless or anything, because you, it's true, like, you lit, there's nothing that you could say that would make it better or worse. Like, as long as you're literally there and listening and you're like, hey, this is the worst fucking thing ever, I don't know how you're feeling, I don't even know what to say, but I'm gonna sit here and just cry with you. Oh, that's enough. You don't need to do anything or, you know, say anything else. But I've been in that position before, Mum, where I'm like, what the hell? What do you say to that? There's nothing. It's the most inconceivable thing to go through. But I tell you what, it's not as bad as I thought it would be, which sounds crazy. But I guess the difference is, and this is going to sound crazy, but breaking up with someone or heartbreak genuinely feels worse than losing my mum. And my mum said that about my dad too. She was kind of like, you know, people, mum didn't choose to leave me, whereas my ex chose to leave and they're still living a life. That's a hell of a lot more pain. Whereas with mum, and I guess I'm lucky that I had a great relationship with her, but there's no loose ends. There's no what ifs. You know, I saw her dead body. I know, like, my brain knows that it's real and that she's not here. So that in itself was, that was kind of easy to get my head around. But heartbreak's a whole different ballgame, I think. I don't know how we got onto that, but yeah.
No, I feel like they're just talking about how to connect with someone who's gone through something like that. It's interesting. I wonder if we should treat, because I definitely would, with someone's going through heartbreak, I would feel much calmer and easier to be like, oh, you know, I feel you, and it's hard. You'll get through. You'll be fine. But oh my gosh, that's fine. That's interesting. Actually, I maybe need to shift how I talk about heartbreak when someone's heartbroken. Although, no, I don't think I would. I would never minimize someone's feelings. That's the thing. Feelings are feelings, and my acknowledgement is, I have no idea how this feels for you, whatever it is. And so, if we can meet in that place of not knowing, and yet I'm here and I'm showing up and I'm with you, maybe that's enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Well, thank you so much. There's only one other thing really that I want to say. Well, there's so much, but I'm kind of like, otherwise we could be here for a really long time, but which is fine with me actually. But my brother, Josh, I have to tell you this little story, and I'm going to read you, Wait, I'll read you the messages he sent me because, well, first I'll tell you the story. Okay, so the story is.
Okay.
I think I told you I was going to tell you the story, but anyway.
Yeah, you did.
The story is Josh lives in Sydney, Australia. I live in Cape Town, South Africa. He's 2 years younger than me. He's an amazing, amazing dude. And we have a very, very different kind of lifestyle and way of approaching life. But we meet in the most important and deep of places. I actually wrote a song for him many years ago called Little Brother. And it's just about how many similarities we have and how much I love him and all those things. Anyway, so he was visiting recently and we did a wonderful road trip, which was the greatest of gifts. And we drove up from Cape Town to visit our dad, which is like a 9-hour drive. So we got some good time together that day and we had a lot of different topics we were chatting about. And we got onto the topic of my podcast. And I was just saying how enjoyable it is that I'm doing it again. I stopped for a while and I was saying, I had this amazing guest, Kina Granis, and she's just such a phenomenal human. And one of my favorite things out of many favorite things is that it's connected me with this lovely lady, Kate McGill. And so now she's going to come on and I'm chatting. And I realized that as soon as I said the words Kate McGill and carried on, Josh had gone, he was driving and he'd just gone very, his whole energy had gone very quiet, like something had changed. And he was just kind of carried on driving. And I said a few other things and he's like, Kate McGill. And he's like, is she British? And I said, yeah, she is. That's how do you know? And he asked me a few more questions. He's like, I can't believe this is the Kate McGill that I thought it was. And he's like, and he was like having one of those moments, you know, when life kind of collides and the sink and you just go, what? And basically I'll just read you the little messages he sent to me because I was like, I'm chatting with her. And so I said, do you have any questions for anything you want to say? And he says, I have no questions for her. Just tell her I say hello. Bought her CD in 2012 and she still sings me to sleep with her angelic voice from time to time. And that her realness is energizing. Yeah. And then he's just moved into a new flat recently. You can also tell her cover of Fix You was the first song I played my new flatmate while bonding over music we loved.
Oh.
So for him, it was this moment of something that he had loved so much that he just never expected to be connected. We were driving through the middle of the Klein Karoo. It's like a semi-desert in South Africa. And suddenly,
that blows my mind.
It was so cool. It was so, his expression and his face, the whole thing.
Oh, man. Hi, Josh, if you're listening. Hello. Thank you so much for being so kind and encouraging and for buying Replaced. I'm assuming it was Replaced. And just how sick is that? That worlds collided and in the middle of a road trip, like to think that two of these human beings are talking about me randomly. It's just, life's fucking crazy. And hello and thank you. Weird.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. That was a good moment. He has another question for you, which is maybe, as you said, it might be a little, I don't know if you want to answer it, we can get into it. He says, would be interested to know why she did all those covers, had insane amounts of views, and then created Metal Lock. What happened / why didn't it work out? And is she now planning on doing more covers / her own stuff? Get the feeling maybe she doesn't connect with the covers and wanted to create.
Yeah, well, it was definitely, I am such an impulsive human being. Like if I just have an intuition, I'm like, yeah, right. I'm just kind of like, nah, I'm going to follow this now. And I follow things, you know, my intuition blindly. And that was one of those things where I remember searching my name on Google, as we all do at some point, and it's saying like, Kate McGill is known for her covers of blah, 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 blah. And I was like, damn, I don't want to be known as this cover girl. Like I write my own stuff and I feel really passionate about it. And so I stopped the YouTube thing very like quickly in my head. I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. Like I want to write with other people. I want to be inspired. I want to, you know, stop that. And a lot of people, yeah, said I was crazy because that was kind of the peak of my YouTube career, if you want to call it. But then Metal Art gave me insane amounts of joy and inspiration. So I knew that that was the right thing because I felt so good. And now, yeah, I'm at a completely different stage where I'm loving doing the covers again and I'm loving creating content and me and Metal Arc are still a thing and I write with Dan and we are still going to release our second album and stuff. And now I just get to do all of it. Now I'm greedy and want to do all of it. So yeah, I think a lot of people don't know what's going on in my brain and neither do I, but I'm just following it.
It's nice to hear from someone else who flows in that way. And actually Josh is, he's so much more sort of analytically minded than I am. He studied business science. He's done an MBA. He's like one of the smartest people I've ever met. And I feel like I fight against my impulsiveness a lot, where I keep trying to do, okay, I'm going to do a video every week and a podcast today, and I'm going to do all these, and it's all going to be structured, and it never lasts. And Josh has often just been like, are you sure you want to commit to that kind of consistency? He's like, just let it happen, which is amazing for, because he's got so much of that skill and that talent, that ability. So it's nice to hear from you as well, who's also in that place.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Kate McGill.
Thank you, Nate.
It's been a great pleasure. And I really appreciate your honesty and openness. And I do not exaggerate when I say that what you're doing and what I'm doing and the people our guests are doing and the people we love are doing by choosing to be honest and open and vulnerable with the world is one of the most healing things we could do for society right now. So thank you so much for that.
Yes, hell yes. Thank you so much for asking me the good questions. I love it. Thank you.
Ah, that was delightful. I am sitting in my office having just edited this whole episode. And so I've had the chance to go through the whole thing and take notes and listen to it. And I hope that you get some awesome stuff out of this. I really appreciate Kate and her willingness to go to all the places, to the brightest lights and the darkest shadows and everything in between. And as I just said to her, I think this is what the world needs more than anything right now as we are in one of the most challenging times I think humanity has ever faced. And now is the time more than ever for us to just get real with each other, get honest. And so, yeah, I wanted to take this opportunity to read a few comments. And thank you so much. One of them is, I actually said at the beginning it was going to be anonymous. One of them isn't, because that was someone who commented directly on the post, Lily's podcast episode at nakedwithnate.com. Remember to go there for the show notes. There's lots of good things. That's how you become a patron or leave a review or read all the full show notes. It all happens at nakedwithnate.com. So make sure to do that at some point. I love that website. I'm also very proud of it because I built it and I put a lot of love and care and attention into it. Anyway, so this first comment was on, as I said, Lily LeBeau's episode, and it was, I really loved the episode. It was my first time listening to your show, and the longer I listened, the more I really loved it. It was a breath of fresh air to hear such usually forbidden topics spoken about as if they were normal things. I wish I could feel comfortable talking about these things to my friends, but I don't think they would quite understand. Keep up the awesome work you do, and I'll have to go back and listen to all the older episodes. And that comment was from Jess. Thank you, Jess. You hit all the nails on all the heads of everything that I ever dreamed that this podcast can do for someone. It's literally bring the taboo, the forbidden, bring the topics that have been marginalized and demonized and ostracized and bring them out into humanness and just fucking talk about them. It's okay. We're human. It's all us expressing ourselves. If we can just connect in that place, I think we can heal ourselves. We can heal each other. We can heal the world. It's possible. And it requires that courageous honesty. And I so hope that you find either new friends or with your current friends or whoever it is that you love and need to communicate with, I hope you can find a way to safely do that, to be heard and held and loved and cared for. That is my wish for you. Do let me know how that goes as it unfolds going forward. And if you do want some specific tools about communication exercises, I can help you out with that. Also, if you want an epic online community that I think is just one of the safest, most beautiful places I hang out on the internet, if actually it's the most, is my Patreon page. If you become a patron, you get access to a members-only Discord server, which is basically like an online forum or community, and you can talk about anything on there. It is available, and the people on there are such rad humans, so kind, so gentle, so available for all the things. So yes, thank you. Next up, I'm trying not to say as much, but it's really hard. I know I can edit it out. Now I can't edit that one out because I'm talking about it. Trying to just pause without having to fill it with something else. Anyway, someone sent me the most glorious of messages on my Facebook page after listening to the Lily LeBeau episode. So this is an anonymous comment from a wonderful human, and this is what that human said. Hi, Nate. I'm a recent follower/liker of you and your page, and just listened to your latest podcast with Lily LeBeau. Thank you. Thank you to both of you for speaking so openly about sexuality, as well as sexuality in relation to so many other areas of life. I have been in an open marriage for a year now, 10 years not open, but we explored together. And although this year of sexual exploration has been liberating, exciting, and rejuvenating, I have also found myself riddled with shame, judgment towards myself, and a lot of confusing questions of, what the fuck am I actually doing? Listening to this podcast calmed my mind in the most wonderful way. It gave me answers to questions I didn't even know I had. So thank you. Thank you for sharing your truth so that I may learn to embrace and share mine more freely. Oh, my word. That is what it is about, guys. That is the whole thing. That is the whole purpose. That is the whole meaning. For me, I realize more and more that I feel most fulfilled when I hear things like that, things like Jess and this other wonderful human have said, when I've heard the comments about my songwriting, how my songs have helped people through their darkest times or helped them to express their brightest times or just helped them through the craziness of being human. When I hear that this podcast is having the kind of impact and effect that it's having for people, it fills my heart and it lets me know that I am worthy. It is worth me getting out of bed in the morning and doing and showing up. This is what it is. So thank you so much for taking the time to share those with me. Even just sharing the comments again, reading them out, I just feel so full and grateful and delighted. So, oh yes, let's do this. Let's keep this growing. You wonderful listeners, you are getting naked with Nate. You're getting naked with yourselves. This is what the world needs. Feelings, opinions, expression, openness, just honesty and truth, kindness. Like, we can do this. It's worth doing. Now is the time. So one more time, do visit the show notes, nakedwithnate.com. And that's where you can become a patron if you value and you can afford to. If you can't, then totally cool. There are many others who can afford. And those are the ones who pay so that everyone gets to enjoy it and use it. And that's how it should be. You can also leave a review if you'd prefer. I love the reviews and I will definitely read them out here. That's it. All of this is at nakedwithnate.com. You can also leave a voice note, which I think is rad. If you go to nakedwithnate.com and you'll see at the top, there's a little say hello button. Click that menu item and you will see you can leave a voice note. You have to be on Safari browser on an iPhone, but otherwise from your desktop. And I'm not sure about Android. But anyway, that's all techie stuff. The whole thing I just really want to say is you're amazing. I hope to hear more from you. I love hearing from you. I can't wait to bring you our next episode. Thank you to Kate McGill for this. Be sure to go to the show notes. Check out all her goodness and her amazing podcast. And for now, thank you for getting naked with Nate. You are awesome. I am Nate, and I'll see you back here next week.
Well, I'm here naked, and that's the truth, and so are you, and it's okay to remember that it's okay to really